Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to Primetime Crime Podcast. I am your host, Kylie, and in this podcast, we are going to deep dive into some lesser-known unsolved true crime cases, from missing persons to unsolved homicides. This is the place where we are going to unpack it all, research it all, talk about it all, and try to bring justice to these families after all of these years. We are going to take it one story at a time, one case at a time, and hopefully justice will be ours.
Are you tired of this reality? Us too. How about once a week you take a break and visit a different reality? In Jack Billings Presents Haunted Apartment Complex, we bring you a comedy podcast full of ghosts, werewolves, gentle vampires, and Frankenstein monstrosities made of 72 people stitched together. And somehow, that's not even the strange stuff. A proud member of the Podmoth Network. Every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. There's nothing wrong with your audio. I've been a ghost this whole time. Shyamalan twist.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us yet again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode. How are you doing today, Mom?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited for today's story.
Are you? Ooh, fun. And it's a bizarre story, so that means that hopefully
it's a good story. Nothing bad happens in it, really.
Weird stuff. Well, I've got bad stuff that happens in mine. So,
Not in my story. So, my story's good.
Okay.
What are you going to be telling us about today?
I'm going to be talking about a guy named Ricky Dale Simmons Sr. from North Carolina. And he was he was not a nice guy. Can confirm. He was not a nice guy. But
if it's your brutal, yeah, I'm assuming he's not a nice guy.
It takes a nice little turn, though, that helps the situation to be less bad. But what have you got for us?
I have the biggest bank heist in United Kingdom history.
Oh, I love a good heist. You know it.
A famous person is involved, so. Ooh,
even better.
Yes. And to go with it, I have the UFC Knockout Punch Cocktail.
I love the name.
And it's spot on. It really is. Like, once I get into the story, you'll see why I picked this cocktail.
Okay, cool.
You need 2 ounces of bourbon, 1 ounce of pineapple juice, 1 ounce of orange juice, 1 ounce of lime juice, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, and 1 dash of Angostura bitters, which sounds delicious. Let's see how this tastes.
I am so excited for this drink. It's going to be delicious.
It sounds really good. Yes. There's no way it can't be. So.
Right. I love all those things. All right. Here we go. That's good.
Yeah. I'd make that again.
Yeah. A little fruity, a little sweet. I don't know if the Angostura bitters need to be in there, but.
It doesn't really do much. I don't really taste them.
No.
The sweetness of the juice overpowers all the other
stuff.
I
think so. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about Lee Murray. So Lee Brahim Murray Lamrani was born November 12, 1977 to parents Barbara Murray and Brahim Lamari in South London.
Okay.
His father was Moroccan, which will come into play later in the story. But Brahim was volatile, his father. So Lee Murray is the guy we're talking about.
Okay.
But his full name includes his father's name.
Right. Yes. So, I got confused there for a minute. The dad was not a nice guy.
Brahim Lamrani.
Yes.
Sorry.
Dad.
It's hard. That's a dad.
Okay.
Lee Murray is the guy we're talking about. But
gotcha.
So Brahim was a vile and violent drunk who was absent for the first 7 years of his life. When he came back, he would attack Lee and his mother, and one day Lee snapped. When he was a teenager, his father had hit him, and Lee decided to stand up for himself and knocked out his dad.
Okay. You go.
This will be a recurring theme in this story, but
okay.
This caused his father to move out, fearing that if they lived together, that one of them would have ended up dead.
Yeah, kind of sounds like it.
After graduating from school, Lee found himself in a life of crime. He was selling drugs with Paul Allen, a friend he had met from school. So, okay. Paul Allen is his right-hand man, basically.
Best bud.
He was selling drugs with Paul Allen. Oh, I already said that. Lee was sort of an enforcer for a gang because he knew how to fight.
Well, obviously.
He was known for punching people that either wouldn't pay or were encroaching on his gang's territory.
Okay.
So he was just beating people up left and right. Lee was later arrested for possession of cocaine and weed after a fight broke out on his territory. Mm. He was trying to get the other gang off his territory and got wrapped up. But after Lee got out, he began religiously working out and continuing his gang's enterprise. So he was still selling drugs, but now him and his buddy Paul were working out full time.
Okay.
Lee became very brazen towards cops, mocking and intimidating them on the streets and even following them around in his car, which is pretty impressive for Britain. I know the cops over there can just, they don't have the First Amendment there. So you can get arrested for saying the wrong thing to someone.
Yeah. But and plus, the officers probably aren't armed with anything more than a nightstick.
I think they have guns. I think those are the only people that can have guns there.
I don't know. I read a lot of books based out of the UK where the officers do not carry firearms at all. Like, they have armed officers, but that's a special unit.
Okay, so it says not all police officers routinely carry guns.
Yeah.
Only specially trained officers. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that makes
sense. It's like the SWAT team.
The guns are the only ones. No one has guns there unless it's a shotgun for shooting pheasants and you're extremely rich. Like,
probably.
You can basically only have a gun if you're super rich there.
Yeah.
It's not anything like here, but. In late December of 1998, Lee's girlfriend, Shoban Rawlings, gave birth to their first daughter, Lily June.
Oh, that's a nice name.
1 week later, Lee's gang was wrapped up and a majority of his members were sent to prison, but Lee managed to avoid arrest. So he was still in the gang at this time. He's selling drugs, beating people up and whatnot. But this, the series of arrests that happened made Lee assess his life and decide to try and make legal money the best way he saw fit. Only thing he was good at. Not the only thing, I should say. What he was best at.
Right.
He started training in mixed martial arts. And about a year after his daughter was born, he stepped into the ring at an event called the Millennium Brawl and knocked out his opponent in the first round.
Okay.
He began training seriously and attended a boxing gym and a wrestling gym with the hopes of going into the UFC. So that's kind of where he got his fame from. But
okay.
However, the owner of the boxing gym he was training at was arrested by the Scotland Yard after it was discovered that the owner was planning a heist. So,
do love a heist.
Lee had another professional fight in the early 2000s against Mike Tomlinson. The night before the fight, Lee was at a pub having some beers. A man accused Lee of stealing his seat and a fight broke out. Lee single-handedly knocked out the guy who harassed him, the guy's friend, and a bartender who tried to break up the fight.
Jeez.
Lee broke his hand during the fight, so the following day, during his professional fight, he was only able to use his right hand and won the fight by submission, which means he
got
the other guy to tap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Lee continued with his fighting career and was given a UFC contract in 2004, having an 8-2 record, meaning he won 8 fights, lost 2. And he had won no contest. But that's kind of whatever. However, Lee was only able to fight for the UFC once due to complications with his visa, because he was currently fighting a criminal case. He got a UFC contract. He fought in the UFC once and couldn't do it again.
Wow.
And the first fight, he won by submission in the first round. And if you guys like fighting, you should watch. Yeah, he's a good fighter. And he
locked up
a really good fighter. I'd just look up Lee Murray UFC, and it's like a 3-minute video. That's how quick it was.
Wow.
Yeah. In 2005, Lee was attending a birthday party when his friend got into a fight. Lee stepped in to stop the fight, but was stabbed in the conflict.
Oh.
He suffered a punctured lung and severed artery.
Oh, that's a bad day.
At the hospital, he was resuscitated 4 times before stabling out. Yeah.
Holy crap.
This injury was so severe, it meant he would not be able to make any money fighting anymore. So Lee sought out a different way to make some money. Lee contacted his old friend Paul Allen, and they started planning the largest heist in English history.
Yes.
Their target was the Tonbridge Securitas Depot. The depot was a cash sorting facility used by the Bank of England to distribute freshly printed pounds and had around 25 workers at all times distributing money into bags. So they'd sort fives into a $5 bag, tens into a $10 bag, hundreds, 50s. Yeah.
Oh.
So the gang hired a guy to get a job working at the facility, and he had a camera in his belt buckle.
Oh my gosh.
He was walking around filming.
That's badass.
Yeah. Yeah. So they hired this guy just to get a layout, kind of understand how things worked. He was working security, so they know if this happens, this is what the code is to do.
Like, smart.
Their plan was to kidnap the manager, Colin Dixon, and his family. The gang managed to get a hold of some police uniforms. So they had the fancy
impersonating police
yellow vest, UK police stuff. And they had the same like model of car that undercover police cars had. So they pulled over Colin on his way to his house in this car. 2 police officer uniform people get out.
Right.
And they tell Colin to get into their car. They handcuff him. And they pretend to drive to the police station. But before they get there, they pull a gun on him and tell them their real plan.
Okay.
2 other gang members went to Colin's home, dressed in police uniforms once again, and told Colin's wife that she and her son would need to come with them because Colin was in a severe car accident. So there's 2 kidnappings going on at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So both Colin and his family were driven to a nearby farm and held at gunpoint and questioned about the interior of the bank and how to get in and stuff. Mm. Still dressed as police, they loaded Colin in a car and put Colin's family into a box truck. When the car arrived, Colin was led by the fake police officers into the depot. One gang member subdued the door operator once inside and opened the gate to allow the other vehicle to come in. So they didn't, apparently it was a new door operator, so they didn't even question when Colin, the bank manager, walked up with two police officers holding guns. So they just let him in and knocked this dude out, tied him up, and opened up the door. Yeah.
I guarantee that situation is going into their training now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The gang was wearing ski masks to hide their identity and were armed to the teeth with pistols, shotguns, AK-47s, and submachine guns. They were carrying more than a Call of Duty loadout. You can only have two guns in Call of Duty. Like,
they're in the U.S. or something?
UK.
All that firepower. I know, but
that's the crazy part.
Firepower is the shit that you see here, not there.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
I know, it's wild.
They have to connect somewhere.
That's wild.
Yeah. Colin warned all of his employees to comply with the gang, and all 14 employees were tied up because they had his wife. They brought the wife with them, wife and kid, so they could threaten him, obviously.
For sure. But... yeah.
So the gang originally struggled with filling the box truck. The money was kept in big metal cages on wheels, and they were so heavy that the robbers couldn't lift them into the truck. So one robber tried to use a forklift to try and put the cart in, but couldn't figure out how to drive it.
Oh.
So he got one of the employees to drive it, and the employee just kept crashing it on purpose. So they decided to use a pallet jack instead. And they were able to load 53 million pounds, or about $60 million today, into the box truck.
They could have
stolen an additional 154 million pounds, but they didn't have another way to transport it. That's how much money was there, and they stole about a quarter of it.
Oh.
So the gang left with the box truck and locked all the employees in money cages, as well as Colin and his family. The alarm was triggered about 30 minutes after they left, and the police arrived to conduct an investigation. 4 days after the heist, Lee and Paul fled to Morocco. Since Lee's father was born in Morocco, that technically gave him nationality.
Okay.
Due to the laws that they have over there.
Right.
However, Lee was arrested in Morocco by a joint task force between Moroccan and the UK police. In June 2009, Lee was confirmed to have Moroccan citizenship, so he was not extradited to the UK and was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment. However, when he tried to appeal his sentence, it was raised to 25 years.
Oh. Oops. Whoops-a-daisy.
Should have just let it be, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not how you think that's going to go.
A UFC fighter did the biggest bank robbery in UK history. Like, that's
amazing.
That should be a movie. If someone hasn't made a movie out of that, then someone needs to get on that.
For sure. I would watch that all day.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
I love the movie Southpaw. Like, if they just did that, but then instead of the dead wife and getting the kid back,
it's movie.
Winning money. It's a Jake Gyllenhaal fighting movie.
Oh,
he's
I don't
got
think I've seen that
10 of them now, but
yeah, interesting.
I don't know. That'd be a good movie to watch.
It would be good. It's crazy.
All right, let's hear about your story, Mom.
Okay, my story. Ricky Dale Simmons Sr. was born in North Carolina on May 10th, 1959. His parents were Noah and Joyce Simmons. I couldn't find a lot of information about like his background and his childhood and stuff like that, but it doesn't really pertain. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe it made him the wonderfully not nice person that he was, but I couldn't find a lot of information. However, in January 1986, Simmons was involved in an incident with his girlfriend, Donna Miller. The couple shared a mobile home in Bessemer City, North Carolina. And when I say incident, he strangled her to death. Yeah. I don't know the details, like what it happened, because it was 1986. So it was a while, you know, it was a long time ago. And
keep the best paperwork.
Right. Right. And it wasn't something that we could easily access today. I mean, you know, without doing like a old newspaper search and all of that. Regardless, he strangled his girlfriend. Afterwards, he wrote a confession letter, then took a drug overdose in an effort to take his own life. 3 days later, okay. He was arrested for first-degree murder. So, like I said, not a nice guy. After being released on bond, he was involved in a standoff with police for 10 hours, in which he threatened to attempt suicide again. He had a rifle and was holed up in a local motel. He was eventually detained, though. And after his trial, he was convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to 20 years in prison. However, he only served about 6 years for Donna's murder, and he was released in 1992. Fast forward to 2008. What this guy did in between then, I don't know. I don't care. Because 2008 is when shit got nasty. At this time, Simmons is working as a maintenance man for an apartment complex that he lived in Gastonia, North Carolina. For the previous 6 years, Simmons was dating Kim Springer, and they lived together for a while. They were kind of off again, kind of thing. But in March 2008, Kim broke up with Simmons and she moved out. Switching to a different person now, Jamie Fraley, who was 22 years old, lived two doors down from Simmons. Jamie was engaged to Simmons' son, Ricky Jr., who in April of that year had been incarcerated. He was in jail for a larceny charge. It's important because that means he wasn't around when Jamie disappeared. So Jamie, in the beginning of April, wasn't feeling well, and she had been to a local hospital a few times for her illness. Basically, they diagnosed her with the flu, sent her home. She still wasn't making good progress. On April 7th, she made a couple of trips to the hospital with friends giving her rides to and from home. Late that night, Jamie wasn't improving, and she was worried about her condition. So she called a friend to take her to the hospital to go back for the third time. She was on the phone with another friend, and she said, "Oh, my friend is here to give me a ride. I'm going to the hospital." Didn't give the name of who was driving her, didn't give any other details, just said, "My ride is here. I'm going to go to the hospital and see if they can figure out why I'm sick." Basically, She didn't make it to the hospital. Surprise. I mean, we're talking about her on The Brutal Story. So she didn't make it to the hospital and she was never seen again. Her family reported her missing the next day when she didn't arrive for an important appointment. Her cell phone was later found about a mile away from the apartment complex, but it gave no information about where Jamie was. They didn't have any details of like tracking it or anything like that. They couldn't figure anything out. They were just like, "Well, we've got her phone, but we don't know where she is." There was no information about who picked up Jamie that night or where she went after that. However, on one of her previous trips to the hospital for this mysterious illness, Jamie had gotten a ride from her fiance's dad. So Ricky Simmons Sr. Police started focusing their investigation on him due to his criminal history and his connection to Jamie. Simmons was offered a polygraph, but he declined it. The investigation for Jamie continued, though. Simmons went on with his life. He moved out of the complex, just carried on with everything. At the end of the next month, May, Simmons' ex-girlfriend Kim contacted the police about Simmons harassing her. So we're back to the ex-girlfriend. Officers told her that Simmons had been watching her. She was able to get a protective order against him. In her request for the order, she stated how a window lock in her home was broken and that she and her roommates were scared for their safety because of this ex-boyfriend, Simmons. A couple of days after getting the protection order, Kim's car was broken into while it sat in her driveway. You know, some stuff was stolen, but, you know, nothing that she could do about it after the fact. A couple of weeks after getting the protection order, Kim went to work. This was Saturday, June 7th. Mid-afternoon or so, her car alarm started going off. She went out, checked on the vehicle, didn't see anything wrong, didn't see anything missing, doors are still locked, nothing going on. She turned the alarm off and went back to work, went on with her day. She left work that night around 10:30 p.m., and she noticed a bad smell, but figured she must have left something in the car that had turned, you know, something wet. We've all accidentally leaving that gross thing, and we're like, good God, what's that smell?
A shaker bottle, the usual something. Suspect.
Yes, exactly. A protein shake that has the remnants have turned.
Yes.
Yeah. Being late at night, she just went home. The next morning, she drove herself and a few friends to church and noticed the smell in the car had gotten worse. Several hours later, that day, in the evening, she decided to clean her car and see if she could find the source of the smell. She didn't find anything in the car. She went around to the back and opened the trunk. That's when she found the dead body of her ex-boyfriend, Ricky Simmons.
Oh, no. That's a rough thing to find.
Yes. The police were called to deal with the body and the situation. Investigators believed that Simmons had broken into Kim's car that Saturday afternoon, which is what caused the alarm to go off. He climbed himself into the trunk and closed the lid. And that's what set the alarm off. But because she didn't open the trunk at the time, who does that? Why would you open your trunk? She just turned the alarm off, went back to work, whatever. Simmons had keys to Kim's car in one of his pockets, and it's believed he stole the key when the car was broken into a few days before. Since she didn't look in the trunk on that day, the alarm went off. She didn't know he was in there. She was like, whatever. I looked in the windows. Everything was fine. The temperatures that weekend were in the 90s. And the autopsy showed that Simmons had died from overheating. Although the trunk had an emergency release hatch, the little function where you can get out of the trunk, it was not used. Either he passed out and then died, or became confused by heat exhaustion and then eventually died. Either way. He died in the trunk of her car. With his death, any information he might have had regarding Jamie's disappearance will never be known. And his own son believes that he was involved somehow in Jamie's disappearance. But
man, that's
he was the only one that knew anything about it, and now he's melted in a trunk.
Jesus Christ.
I know. One sorry.
Way to put it.
Well, I mean, he was probably in there wrong, for over still. 24 hours.
Ugh, so nasty.
Yeah. Because her alarm went off like mid-afternoon, 3-ish, I think it was. And then I saw somewhere on one of the sources that she cleaned her car at like 6 o'clock the next night.
Jesus.
Ugh. So, yeah. Who knows how long he was in there before he died.
That's so sad.
It's so sad. I mean, not for him. For everybody else.
The person that found it. That's what I'm most sad about. Like, yes. Oh, my God.
You got to sell that car.
So gross.
Ooh. Yeah. And it's sad that there's no answers about Jamie and her missing case. And I mean,
yeah,
he had a criminal history of killing a girlfriend, so they kind of thought he might be good for this, but they didn't have any evidence for it. And
so others, nasty.
Yeah, so. Eeks!
You have a chaser for us.
I do have a chaser. It's about an article I found on Good News Network. I thought this was really cool. But a group of chemists in Canada have come up with a new stir stick for cocktails. And its specific purpose is to dunk it in your drink and see if your drink's been spiked.
Hmm. Oh, like one of the pool tester things, like where it lights up different colors for.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They think that there's other items out there in the world that will do this, but they're not priced for high consumption. So their goal is to get the pricing down on these stir sticks so that it can be something that bars stock. And
that's cool.
You can just go grab a stir stick and test your drink.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be a little concerned about whatever the chemicals and the testing things are in my drink, I guess, but.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it works, but it's an interesting concept.
It seems a little sketchy. But
maybe.
I do like the concept, maybe. Being able to just like test right away. Yeah. But I feel like whatever chemical it is that's testing it shouldn't be in
and
something you're drinking, maybe.
You know, it's
I don't
not
know
gonna
how that
be
works,
something
though.
I don't either. And it's not something that you can, it's not gonna rule all things out, but I think they were targeting, you know, the kind of more commonly used drugs that people put in drinks to spike them.
Rohypnol and shit.
Yeah, Rohypnol, all those not great things. So, first of all, people, don't spike somebody else's drink. It's rude. But it'd be nice
rude?
To have...
I don't think rude is the right word for that. I think you need to be more harsh.
Okay.
You should never spike someone's drink.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. But, you know, there are assholes in this world who don't think that the rules and laws and shit apply to them. And they're going to be assholes no matter what. So cover your back. Don't expect other people to not be assholes. And just, you know, look out for yourself. So, unfortunately, that's the way of the world. And that's just the way things are. So, anyway, what's your chaser?
My chaser is another listen recommendation for a audio drama called The Last Known Position.
Oh.
It's kind of made me upset because it's
pornographic.
I know it does. But it's what's it called? Thalassophobia? What's the
I don't know. A fear of something.
Okay, yeah. So it triggers my thalassophobia, which is an immense fear of deep bodies of water.
Oh, okay.
So it's like these people are sent out. They're kind of tricked into going out on this oceanic expedition.
Okay.
In search of a plane that went down.
Okay.
But there's the leader is lying to him and knows why the plane went down, and it involves a sea monster.
Oh.
So.
Didn't expect a sea monster
super,
to come in.
Super scary.
Okay.
But it's very immersive. Like, it's made by the people that made Baraska and all that stuff. So it's very immersive. But
cool.
That's my chaser. It's very.
I'll have to check it out.
It creeped me out. Because of my fear of water, but
Well, yes, but yours is not a paralyzing fear. You just don't necessarily like it. But you like going
on
cruises.
It's not paralyzing, but yeah, but if the crew, okay, that doesn't count. A cruise does not feel like a boat. When I was on that Alaska charting trip, I was scared. I was like legit, because I was like a 35-foot boat and you could see the water. We saw a shark go underneath the boat, hit our lines. I could see the shark. Like, That freaks me out. I do not like that.
Okay. But I can see that.
Cruises are different. You can't even feel the sway on a cruise ship because it's like a floating city.
Yeah. It's great.
If there was a zombie apocalypse, I'd want to be on a cruise ship, probably.
Unless there was a chance that somebody on there could turn and then you're screwed because you're on the boat with zombies. I mean, you can push them overboard.
If you knew that, like,
nobody's going to turn.
Everyone that was infected right now would turn in 12 hours, and 12 hours later, the boat is still free. You just live on the boat. You just plant vegetables and shit. Like,
yeah. I think the plumbing and the water situation would be problematic.
Yeah. You build toilets like overboard, so when you poop, it just flies
you gotta like flies sit off the edge.
And just you have people fishing the whole time.
Going to Stop it. Nope.
Yeah. If zombie apocalypse happened, find me on a cruise ship, please.
Okay. Let's not have a zombie apocalypse. I don't want that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go ahead and
thank
give
you,
us
everyone.
Apple review. If you drop us an Apple review, we will read it for you.
Definitely.
Give you a little shout out.
Say, thank you so much. We love you.
Yes. Give us a 5 stars on Spotify. Follow. DM us if you have any suggestions of stories you'd like to hear.
Share us with your friends.
Yes.
Takes like 2 seconds to go. Copy, share, go. Pick a friend.
Yeah. All right. Love you, Mom. All right.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.